And now we take you to Speaking from the Heart with your hostess, Gloria Taylor Edwards.
Welcome, audience, to another edition of Speaking from the Heart. I'm your host, Gloria Taylor Edwards. Thank you for tuning in. With the publication of his new memoir, released a little over a week or so ago, but the conversation is still hot, and in an appearance on a CBS television news program, former CIA director George Tenet became the latest former official to admit publicly that the Bush administration launched its war against Iraq based upon false pretenses and manipulated intelligence. And so, audience, this evening, all that's politics. I've got my favorite guy now, political analyst from out of Washington, D.C., all the news. This is his tag, all the news from Washington that the government doesn't want you to know. For this discussion and much more, political analyst and talk show host Mark Levine of RadioInsideScoop.com is online with me. Are you there, Mark?
I am here, Gloria, and very happy to be here.
I know you're a busy guy. You're talking, and you can be viewed, and we want to let everyone know during the course of this program where they can see you or where they can hear you as well. We just said RadioInsideScoop.com because you certainly can get the latest news of what's happening out of D.C. and what's going on, what's current, what's past. You got it. You can talk about it. And so tonight, audience, Mark and I are going to talk about former CIA Director George Tenet's newly released book, At the Center of the Storm, My Years at the CIA. We're also going to get Mark's analysis of the real deal on why the U.S. initiated the Iraq War. And, of course, Mark's analysis. The 2008 presidential election, as crowded as it is, Mark's take on the most watchable Democratic and Republican candidates and why we should watch them. So we're ready to rock and roll. I want to tell everybody just a little teeny bit about you, Mark, if they have not read the email blast that I sent out for my online listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. For those in the Richmond Tri-Cities area, and you have not heard Mark Levine's name, shame on you. But anyway, Mark Levine served as a legislative counsel to a high-ranking Democratic member of Congress on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Select Committee on Homeland Security. And for the past several years, armed with an inside knowledge of political movers and shakers, and I mean he's well-armed, and well utilizing his tenacious upfront style, Mark Levine has developed a loyal audience via radio, TV, and internet, to which he consistently provides the inside scoop, that's the name, Radio Inside Scoop, from political players inside and outside the Beltway. News and information that the media almost never reports, and those in government do not want you to know about. Just a little bit about Mark, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But as we get to talking here, I'm sure your years of experience out of D.C. will come out. And audience, we want to let you know, we want to open the floor up, we'll say at 6:30 p.m. time, after Mark and I've gotten in some of these the topics we've laid on the table, you can talk to us. The toll-free number, write it down. You can call us later. Mark doesn't mind, agree or disagree.
Oh, I like callers.
He's tenacious, as we said. What's the word? Tenacious up front, that he is. But he likes callers, and you don't have to agree with him to talk to him. The number, 1-800-806-6723. 1-800-806-6723. Now, Mark, let's get started. The talk is still ongoing, and if there's anything that has occurred, something's always happening out of Washington every day. But the talk is still around George Tenet's book, At the Center of the Storm, My Years at the CIA. a former official admitting publicly that the Bush administration launched this war against Iraq based upon false pretenses and manipulated intelligence. That's some serious stuff right there.
Well, it is, but it's kind of late. I mean, you know, thank you, George, for finally telling us the truth, but where were you in 2003? Where were you in 2004 when, you know, when Bush was running for re-election? When we began this war, why didn't you resign then and tell us the truth? I mean, he's not the first to tell us this. The first, really, Paul O'Neill, the former Treasury Secretary, was the first to come out, and he, in a really terrific book called The Price of Loyalty that is, I think, back in 02, it's that old, showed us the maps, maybe 03, but they showed us the maps of Iraq, where the president, on January 30th, 2001, 10 days after he's in office, long before 9/11, was already dividing up Iraq into various oil fields. Mobil Exxon gets this, British Petroleum gets this. They were already dividing up Iraq at a time when, at least ostensibly, they said that they had no designs on Iraq. So really, I think the Treasury Secretary, again, moderate Republican, he really gets the first go at this, and you know, they were criticizing him and saying he was mad he lost his job. But then came Richard Clark, again, before the 04 elections, back in 03, 04, Richard Clark, the counterterrorism czar, again, a Republican. He worked for Reagan. He really not Republican or Democrat. I mean, he was hired by Reagan. He worked for him. He worked for Bush Sr. He worked for Bill Clinton. He worked for Bush Jr. The counterterrorism czar, the man in charge of dealing with terrorism all across the country, the man that Dick Cheney, in fact, when Cheney thought a plane was going to hit the White House and he was ducking undercover underground, he said, Richard Clark, you're in charge.
Oh, my God.
this is the guy. And he told us that Condi Rice got a memo saying Bin Laden determined to attack the United States and did nothing about it. He's the one who told us about the summer of threat when Bush and Tenet would be told every single day about these threats and do nothing about it. So Richard Clark, I give a lot of kudos to. George Tenet, yeah, I'm glad he said it. Yeah, I'm sure it's true. We can talk about specifically what he said. But for me, it's like a little too late. I mean, yeah, better late than never, I guess.
But why now? Because now I'm looking at the amount of money he was paid.
$4 million.
So
yeah.
What is it new in this piece? We've been hearing it. We've been hearing rumors about, we were lied to in this preempted war. No impeachments, if you will. This is some serious allegations we're talking about. But why now? Do you think?
I think there is some new stuff. I don't want to completely attack Tenet. I think the idea that, you know, we were manipulated into war, that they were manufacturing intelligence and cherry-picking intelligence, I mean, I've been reporting this since June 03.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and Democrats and have been convinced of this since 04, and independents have been convinced of this since 05. So the general nature of what he's saying, everyone except that 28% of the public that still supports George Bush, and, you know, they probably only listen to the Fox propaganda channel and have no idea what's true and what's false. But other than those people, pretty much this is something America already knew. But he did give us details that we didn't know. I mean, he does tell us, in fact, that the day after September 11th, on September 12th, Richard Perle, one of the prime neocons in the White House, was going around saying Iraq has to pay for this. Paying for 9/11, which Iraq had nothing to do with. He does talk about he took out of the speech the lie about Saddam Hussein seeking uranium from Niger, Africa, the lie that led to the whole what I call Traitorgate, the whole Valerie Plame affair that led to Libby's conviction.
Uh-huh.
That they put it back in twice more, and he failed to catch it the third time. But he couldn't give a reason why they put it in. There were a number of things where he said, you know, they did this, and he told them not to do it. So there are specifics he does add to the story. I don't want to completely attack Tenet.
Yeah.
But you're right. Why now? Well, you know, who knows? He's getting $4 million for his book. I guess it took some time to write the book. But, you know, if he wanted to do good for his country, and he comes on 60 Minutes and he acts, you know, very patriotic and very defensive of his country.
Yeah.
If he had said this in 04, you might think it would have changed the election. I mean, we only needed a few hundred thousand votes in Ohio, and John Kerry would be president right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I give him a little bit of praise, but not too much praise, because I really think he should have said this sooner.
But what frightens me, Mark, is I saw a clip where George Tenet was actually sitting behind Colin Powell while Colin Powell was reading off, I guess, the purpose for going to war. And
this is the United Nations.
Yes, and he said, right, he meaning George Tenet said he knew that Colin Powell was reading lies when he said that we know that there are weapons of mass destruction.
They had no evidence that there was any, to be exact.
But they were saying that they did.
Well, they sure were. And Colin Powell, to his credit, did apologize for this fairly early on and before the election.
There's a rumor, and I don't know whether you and you're insider, that he was actually going to be fired if he didn't resign or retire.
I'm sure that's true. Colin Powell committed the ultimate crime in the Bush administration. That crime is not torture. Plenty have done that. That crime is not spying on the American people. Plenty have done that. The crime is not violating the Constitution or ignoring people in need in a hurricane. Plenty have done that. Now, the crime in the Bush administration, the only crime, is not being loyal. And if you tell the truth to the American people in a way that's unflattering to the Bush administration,
yeah,
you are out of there. And Colin Powell played good soldier for a long time, in my view, too long. He should have resigned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But by 03, 04, he was already on the outs because this is a man who was telling the administration what he thought was true.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's the one who famously said, if you break it, you bought it. In other words, if you go into Iraq and you destroy it, then you own it. You can't just get rid of Saddam Hussein and think your job is done. And he wasn't listened to, and Colin Powell, and I understand what he did. In his view, he could have more power and influence inside the administration than outside. But in my view, at some point, he should have realized that he wasn't doing any good within, and the only way to help save his country was to leave earlier,
yeah,
and to tell us the truth. Now, Powell has yet to write memoirs on,
yeah,
this. But
yeah,
I am sure that he is as angry or angrier than George Tenet. I don't know whether he'll ever write the memoirs. He's still somewhat of a loyal soldier, even though,
yeah,
they completely mistreated him. But I think Colin Powell had good instincts. I think he wanted to do the right thing. But I would argue at the end of the day, he put his loyalty to his president ahead of his loyalty to his country. I mean, he told them the right things, but he didn't tell us the right things until it was too late.
Yeah, yeah. And the horrific part is that we are still counting bodies.
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
know, we are still counting, sure, even with this surge, this recent surge that President Bush supported and knocking down or vetoing against this. It really angers and upsets me when I have a family member that is in Iraq.
Mm.
But
I'm sorry to hear
it's
that.
Just, well, and there are so many people who have lost people.
3,500 lives, tens of thousands wounded, and you know what? Our pain pales in comparison to the Iraqis.
Oh,
the Iraqis,
yeah,
have more than one suicide bomb a day.
Mm.
They are having the amount of Americans that are dead, 3,000 or so, they lose that every month.
God.
Every month. They are losing literally 100 people a day.
So
civilians. They're not military people. You know, and
so,
and
Mark, what is going on? Why do you think? I'm not surprised if I hear Bush isn't reading the news and doesn't care about his popularity count.
He said, I don't read the news. He said that when he began his administration. He said, he proudly said, I don't read the newspaper. I have people that tell me everything I want to hear. And then when people tell him things he doesn't want to hear,
yeah,
he fires them.
Yeah.
So he lives in his own fantasy world, hiring only people that tell him what he wants to hear. It's an amazing, I mean, he's completely out of touch. So everyone's telling him the war's winning, that we're winning the war, because if they told him something other, they'd be fired.
Well, what of the Republicans, and we got a 2008 presidential election coming up, which we're going to talk about. The Republicans can just about count it out as far as in the White House. And so, what's the news on the Hill? You hear you're right there in the thick of it, right, with the Republicans.
I think the Republicans are running scared. Look, George Bush has promised and really, Dick Cheney's the one who controls the war. He always has. Karl Rove does the domestic agenda. Dick Cheney does the foreign policy agenda. George Bush gets to dress up and greet the Queen. I mean, they all have their roles. Dick Cheney has promised the Prime Minister of Iraq, Maliki, that we are not leaving until Bush is no longer president. Now, obviously, Cheney doesn't have the power to make that promise because Congress does have a role. But in effect, Bush is saying, look, I made it, he's not saying it, but here's what I think they're thinking.
Uh-huh.
We screwed up in Iraq really badly, but the real effects of how we screwed up won't show up until after we leave, because that's when Iraq will take its incipient civil war and plunge into a full-scale civil war. It's going to happen whenever we leave, if it's now or if it's 20 years from now, but it's going to happen. I don't want that to happen on my watch, George Bush is saying. That way the next president can be blamed for what, in effect, I started. So he's promised, in effect, we'll just keep Americans dying because I don't want people to blame me. And I want to look good in the record. I don't want to be the one who lost the war. We'll blame the next president for losing the war.
Is he foolish enough to really believe that?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. See, you have to understand that the mindset of the Republicans from Vietnam. See, they argue that it wasn't Lyndon Johnson who lost the war, even though he got us in. It wasn't Richard Nixon who lost the war, even though he accelerated and kept us in. The war was only lost under Gerald Ford because he brought us out. They blame Ford and not Johnson and Nixon. Which Ford did nothing but admit the war was lost and bring the people home. And frankly, it wasn't even President Ford. It was the Democratic Congress who cut off funding. But they still blame the Democrats for cutting off funding in 73 and 74 for forcing the troops to come home. And yet, I mean, that wasn't the problem. The problem was it was a war we could never win to begin with.
Another one.
So this way, it's a way of him saying, I'm not going to do anything. Well, the problem with that, with Cheney's promise and Bush's promises, it's all fine and good for them to make. I mean, you know, Bush can't run for office again, and Cheney's not running for office. But the Republicans in Congress are really getting scared. And so right now, they're with the president, and they're solidly with him, and very, very few Republicans voted for the Democratic bill to withdraw the troops from Iraq. But they are getting scared, and already you're seeing some form of a compromise take place on the Hill where they're saying a few more months, but that's it. A lot of people are mentioning September. You hear that on the Hill a lot. September's right. Being thrown around. In other words, Democrats, if you'll give us 3 more months of funding to September, we Republicans, when we see that Iraq's not going anywhere in September, that's sort of our excuse, if you will. That's our saving face. Well, yeah, more Americans will die and all, but we don't care so much about them. We care about showing we were loyal to the president for 3 more months. And then in September, when it's not working, I think you may see a much more bipartisan bill pass to bring our troops home. And then you have the battle not between president and the Democrats, but between the president and congressional Republicans. And then it could get really ugly.
But when you have a country of people, the majority of people in this country say we want it over, but yet we say we live in a democracy. People that we have voted into office all over this country literally are holding us at bay. It's a game, it appears, and many people are disillusioned by it.
Well, and, you know, it's just part of the way our election system works. I mean, yes, America has wanted the troops to go home for some time now. They voted for that in the Democratic Congress, and the Democratic Congress is acting that will. But the president's elected every 4 years, and let's face it, in November 2004, you didn't have a majority of the American people who wanted to end the war right away. You had maybe half. It was a very close election, the 04 election. You know, in 03, the majority of Americans supported the war when I first came on.
Are we talking about the election that was stolen? Which one?
We know 2000 was stolen.
Every
independent observer has admitted that Gore got more votes in Florida than Bush. Even Matt Drudge has admitted that. So we know that 2000 was stolen. 2004 is a much closer question.
Okay.
I can't say I have a smoking gun on that.
Uh-huh.
There are many, many questions about what happened in Ohio, particularly
right.
the fact that African-American residents were not given the same access to voting machines
right.
that white residents were. If you lived in a heavily black area, you might get two voting machines for whatever, 10,000
people.
Right,
and I thought there were some suits out on that, some litigation.
Well, yeah,
on that.
I don't know that it's gone anywhere because people can't prove that it was done for, you know, for a racist reason. In fact, the person who did it, Kenneth Blackwell, Secretary of State of Ohio, was black. So
that doesn't mean a thing.
Well, I know it doesn't mean a thing, but the point is that what we do know that in more Republican districts, which tended to be rich, white, and suburban, but more Republican districts had more voting machines per person than in the Democratic districts. And we also know, you may remember, those people standing out in the rain for hours and hours and hours until I'm sure, you know, a woman in her 80s would have to go home or, you know, I mean, you can't stand out in the rain. It's literally she's risking her life to vote. We know a lot of people went home. What we don't know is whether the number of people who went home was enough to make the difference in Ohio. It may have been, mm-hmm. and it may not have been. And so it's the election that we can't tell whether it was stolen or not, unlike mm-hmm. 2000, which we know it was stolen.
Okay.
So I just put it a big question mark election.
Well, at some point in the future, because you are pretty apt at this topic, I would love to have a conversation with you on the voting process in this country.
Well, actually, I just did a show on my show right now. In fact, an hour. I tape from 5 to 6 p.m., so
okay.
2 minutes before I came on air...
You were just doing what?
I did a show on verified voting, on paper records. We actually have some good news in that regard. The archive of that show will be on my website within a couple of hours, so any of your listeners who want to hear it
okay.
can go to RadioInsideScoop.com, click on today's show, which is Wednesday, listen to the whole archive, comment on the blog about it if you want. I had a great guest, Pam Smith. She's the president of Verified Voting, talking about, I actually think we are becoming a more democratic country. I'm very excited. With the Democratic Congress, one of the things we're doing is passing a bill to require paper verified records, audits, and it's already passed the House Administration Committee,
mm-hmm.
Which is a start, and I think it's going to pass the House within a couple months or so, and then get to the Senate. I think there's a decent chance that Bush will sign it, because it's very hard to argue that you should have, you know, voting process that's accessible by fraud. It's very hard to argue that. Point if you believe it, you know, it's very hard to articulate, oh, well, I think we should have fraud. Yeah, it's hard. Pam was funny. She said on the air, she said, when she's gone on air about this, people have said, is there another side? And she said, well, I'm for safe, accurate, and verified voting. If you can find someone on the other side, you know,
who's
against safe, accurate, verified voting, you know, bring them on. It's interesting because Republicans have been against this issue for some time. They have never allowed this bill to even come up for a vote. But when it does come up for a vote, these things tend to vote unanimously because people don't want to admit that they're opposed to you know, accurate voting. So it's interesting you raise that because, like I said, just go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, and click on today, Wednesday, and it should be up there within a couple hours for
okay.
people.
It's a very, it's an intriguing topic, and I certainly encourage people who are listening to us to go to your site. It's an easy one to remember, and we're getting ready to go to break. Don't you go anywhere, Mark.
Oh, I'm not going anywhere.
But before we go to break, we want to emphasize that for those who are listening in the Tri-Cities area and did not read the email blast, Mark's web address is where you can listen to a wealth of information there. Radio, it's www.radioinsidescoop.com. And when we come back, I'll make Mark spell it for you if necessary. So you stay there, audience. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Speaking from the Heart with your hostess, Gloria Taylor Edwards. And if you want to call and have a view opinion, you can call us at 1-800-806-6723. 1-800-806-6723. And now, back to Speaking from the Heart.
Welcome back, audience. I'm your host, Gloria Taylor Edwards, and online with me is political analyst and talk show host extraordinaire out of D.C., Mark Levine of RadioInsideScoop.com. Still with me, Mark?
I am still with you.
And on a very quick note, since we're talking all that's politics, there's an organization in this area called Resource Information Help for the Disadvantaged, working with prisoners and ex-offenders, a self-help rehabilitation advocacy organization. Audience, they're doing a voter registration and restoration of felon voters' rights drive. And we want to deal with this before the 2008 elections come up. If you're not registered to vote and you want to, convicted felon, and want your voters' rights restored, you want to make a difference and see a change every third Wednesday, beginning next Wednesday, May 16th, from 1 until 8 p.m., Wesley Memorial United Methodist Church at 1720 Mechanicsville Turnpike in Richmond, Virginia. They will be holding a felon voters' rights drive. For more information, 562, this is a local calling area, 562-2123. That's 562-2123. And perhaps we'll get a word on from them next week. So back to the topic at hand, all that's politics. And at the beginning of the program, we started out talking about
George Tenet.
How in the world did I put you in George Tenet's family?
Well, I was talking about him, so that's okay.
Well, Mark Levine is my guest. George Tenet is a former CIA director, author of the book At the Center of the Storm, his years at the CIA. Now, in my book, the CIA has never been the best of agencies. There's a history there.
There certainly is.
Other topic.
You know, it's funny. I was going, as we were in break, I wanted to go back and see when I first talked about George Tenet on the air. And I have I may have talked about him earlier, but the first time I did a whole show on George Tenet, I keep every show I've ever done on my website. So I got more than 700 shows on my website.
Wow.
And June 4th, 2004, I have a show titled Goodbye George Tenet. And I write, and don't let the door hit you on the way out. So June 4th, he resigned. I write, George Tenet has resigned for, quote, personal reasons, unquote, but President Bush said Tenet was doing a, quote, superb job. Come to think of it, Bush also said Rumsfeld is doing a superb job. Mm-hmm. Maybe W doesn't know what superb means. Tune in today to get the inside scoop on the worst CIA director in American history and how Tenet's policy of protecting his boss led to catastrophic intelligence failures. I wrote that in 3 years ago, in June 4th, 2004, and it just shows that had he said what he said last week, you know, in June 04, we might have a different president today.
So he resigned in 2004.
Right.
Booked 3 years later.
Yeah.
Now. So a lot has occurred during that time. Something was going on during that time that he decide to resign on his own?
Well,
or he was helped along.
He claimed it was for personal reasons, and Bush says it was for personal reasons, and I don't think anybody really believes it.
Yeah, but so it sounds like a Rumsfeld kind of thing. Rumsfeld was literally fired.
Well, yes, he was. That's because Rumsfeld was hanging on to his desk, and they had to pull him out, kicking and screaming as he's grabbing onto the desk with him. I mean, you know, that was sort of embarrassing. But
do you think he'll come out with a book?
Oh, probably. And it'll show that he was right all along, and now Iraq is peaceful and wonderful. What's he going to say? What's he going to say? You know, I mean, I'm sure he'll say he was right all along, but I don't know how he's going to say.
What was he right about?
I don't know. He'll blame his subordinates for messing up the war that he wanted, and he may even blame the president. Who knows? He'll blame everyone and say, you know, he was fine. That's just what I expect.
It's a very interesting time amongst former political Republican officials, ex-Republican officials, and even some now that are in the Senate.
Yeah.
I'm watching them and listening to what they're saying, and it's just it's unusual because they don't usually break. You know, they don't break ranks.
No, not very often.
You know, and I know you've been watching this for a while. Even though if someone was to say to you, oh, you're a diehard Democrat, so you're going to look there and always see something wrong. Is that true?
I look at Democrats, too. I mean, I certainly know you do.
I know you've had them for dinner, too.
Well, no, and I got to tell you, I praised Republicans from time to time. On my last show, on the Verified Voting Show, I pointed out some Republicans that are doing a good job in that regard. To me, it's not about party. It's about who's providing the best for this country. Now, it's true that usually I think the Democrats do the right thing, and usually I think Republicans do the wrong thing. But that's not true for all of them. Every now and then, I'll praise Chris Shays or let's see, who else?
Yeah, it's a slim list.
There are many, but there are a few that I will praise. And
what's your take on Condoleezza Rice?
Well, she's there because she's loyal to the president. Look, she's a very smart woman. She knows who butters her bread. I mean, Colin Powell showed disloyalty and he's gone. George Tenet showed disloyalty and he's gone. She's
a bright woman, but he can't see what's wrong. And now you're going to think I'm spookish saying this, but I want your opinion on it anyway. When I look in her eyes when she's talking, I see nothing. what's scary to me.
You know,
And the fact that, okay, we have this black woman who is in this role, a very key political role right now.
Sure. Secretary of State.
You know,
and the highest place a black woman's ever gone, by far.
And I see something in that. You know, I really do. I don't know what I see, not psychically see. But
well, look, I just think, you know,
she has a her foreign policy in that particular role. She's not effective. And I don't know whether we don't hear a lot. Well, we hear.
But that's not her fault. She's trying to implement a policy that just doesn't make any sense.
If you're intelligent, then you would see that, right?
Well, I think she probably does see it. But she understands that if she were to say anything, she'd be out. I mean, that's the way this administration works. If you see something, some smart way to change policy that disagrees with Dick Cheney or Karl Rove, you're out. I mean, look at Colin Powell, right? I mean, he worked very, very hard to try to tell them behind closed doors.
Yeah.
He didn't show any disloyalty. He simply said, you know, if you go into Iraq, if you break it, you bought it, and we need to plan for post-invasion. And they say, Colin, thank you very much. Do what we say, or you're out. And here's your speech in the United Nations, and read it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a lot of freedom. No one does in this administration. It's a very top-down administration, and I don't think she has a lot of freedom either.
Who do you think that W is a much more stricter
head
leader than his father?
Well, I think Cheney and Rove are the ones in charge. They tell W what to do. They tell Condoleezza Rice what to do. They told Don Rumsfeld what to do. I think Cheney handles the nation's foreign policy and Rove handles the domestic policy. And they try to do it behind closed doors. I mean, you look at this whole flap over Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and the prosecutors that were fired for not being loyal enough to the president. Now, it sure looked like Karl Rove's hand was in it all, but everyone denied everything until the Democrats subpoenaed those email records and we found out, lo and behold, it was Karl Rove. When they outed Valerie Plame, when they literally committed a traitorous act.
Yes.
They outed a CIA agent in a way to shut up the president's critics who were simply trying to tell the American people, we don't have to worry about a nuclear Iraq, trying to tell the truth to the American people. He was willing to commit treason. But when the spokesman was sent out, Scott McClellan, he said, I talked with Carl, he looked me straight in the eye, and he denied it. Well, I'm sure he did look him straight in the eye and denied it, but now we know his fingerprints were all over it. This is an administration run by Karl Rove and Dick Cheney, and George Bush takes their orders, too.
That is so scary, because when we look at issues like the Halliburton,
and Cheney's whole company.
Yeah, all these connections even back to a vice president, but they seem, I don't think we can call Ronald Reagan the Teflon president anymore, the former Teflon
compared
president.
Compared to Bush?
These guys, it's amazing to me. It's amazing. It's almost scary. Which brings me to, we want to talk for a few minutes about your pick, or what you think, because we are flooded now with candidates for the 2008 elections.
Are.
I mean,
that
on both sides.
That we are.
Let's start out with the other side first, the Republican candidacies. And there's a lot of them running out there. Some of the names are familiar to us. Some aren't. There's a Tommy Thompson, Rudy Giuliani, and
John McCain.
And John McCain, and Mitt Romney.
Yeah, he's not that familiar to a lot of people. Really, just John McCain and Rudy Giuliani are really the only national figures that are running.
What do you think of?
I think any of the others would get more than 50% name recognition in the United States.
So why do you think that race is so crowded?
Well, it's crowded because Republicans hate Rudy Giuliani and John McCain. I mean, let's face it. There's just no question about it. I mean, they love that Rudy Giuliani was the September 11th mayor of New York, but he's pro-choice on abortion. He's pro-gay rights. These are things that actually could very much help him in a general election. He'd be a formidable general election candidate, but he has no chance in a Republican primary. Because, Republicans hate women and gay people far more than they care about nation security.
All right.
Ooh, did I just say that? I think I did.
I think you did, and we got it on tape.
No, I stand by it. I think that they care more about issues of abortion and denying gay people equal rights than they care about the nation's security. But I tell you, Giuliani is ahead by a plurality. He's got some 30% of Republicans who are willing to overlook those two stands and vote
for
him.
Well, they didn't like the fact that he was on this abortion issue name.
No, they sure didn't. And they don't like John McCain either, because John McCain has shown that he can stand out on his own. Now, I think John McCain's an honest man. I will give him that. I don't like that he seems to be toadying up to Jerry Falwell and all of, lately. So I'm
the Christian right, folks.
Yeah, I'm afraid his honesty's gone down a little bit. But he's someone who, at least over the years, was willing to stand up to Bush on everything from, you know, McCain-Feingold, campaign finance reform, and other issues.
And the war, did he...
Well, no, but see, on the war, that's why he's in trouble. John McCain fervently supports the Iraq war. All Republican candidates do, but he is making clear that he's willing to live and die by this Iraq war. Well, he's dying. Because the American people don't want to keep fighting this war, and John McCain wants to keep fighting it for the next 20 years. So McCain, who really I thought was the strongest candidate for the Republicans a year or two ago, he's imploding because of the Iraq war. And because I think he legitimately believes, I think he's dead wrong, but I think he legitimately believes that we can win the war in Iraq and bring, you know, democracy and everything to the Middle East.
Goodness.
And he believes. He's drunk the Kool-Aid. He believes it. But
he drank the Kool-Aid.
Because he honestly believes it, I think he's in real trouble. So the Republicans are scrambling to find anyone other than Rudy Giuliani and John McCain, and they got real problems. They got Mitt Romney, who they like in the sense that he is, you know, from the Christian right at least, but he's been flip-flopping because he was governor of Massachusetts. He's also a Mormon, which doesn't bother me any. Harry Reid, the Democratic leader of the Senate's a Mormon. No one says anything about it. But the Christian right that supports Republicans is far more sensitive about that than I think most Americans.
Yeah.
So he's got problems. And then you've got the real wackos out there, people like Senator Brownback of Kansas, who is the darling of the Christian right, but doesn't believe in evolution. I mean,
he's
like out there arguing.
What about Tommy Thompson? We got to go to the Democrats now because that's a whole slew of those.
What about
Tommy Thompson? Why do you think they threw him up in the fray?
Well, in fact, Thompson just did some really negative comments. I'm trying to remember what they were recently. I don't really follow his race that much. I don't think he has a chance in at all, but
I just thought it was strange, even though I've been watching it. You know, where did they dig him up from?
Well, you know, a lot of them are turning now to Fred Thompson, who is a senator with absolutely no positive record of anything important. He basically sat there because they say he looks good. You know, he's really tall and he looks like a prosecutor because he plays one on TV. So he acts like a good leader, even though, frankly, he had a very undistinguished record in the Senate. And so they're turning to him because at least he'll look good on TV. Whatever. Let's move on to the Democrats.
Yeah, let's go to the Democrats because that's probably a lost cause over there.
The Democrats, just as the Republicans have an embarrassment of failures, the Democrats have an embarrassment of riches. I would be happy with probably any person running. I mean, there are a couple of candidates that are really sort of far out there, like Kucinich and former Senator Mike Gravel of Alaska, who the left likes a lot, but they don't have any chance. But any of the mainstream candidates out there, whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Bill Richardson or John Edwards or even Chris Dodd, Joe Biden, I would be happy with any of them as my president. I mean, any of them would be leagues above.
Well, there are two things. Well, the two front runners, Hillary and Obama, I don't think we're ready for a black man, and I don't think we're ready for a woman.
Well, the Republicans are counting on that, and they're hoping that one of our front runners wins, and I think one of our front runners probably will win, and that they can beat that person based on either racism or sexism. There is one person in the wings, and probably only one, that I think can legitimately beat Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Biden?
And it's not John Edwards, and it's not Biden.
Who? Who?
Well, let me give you a hint. He was elected president in 2000.
He was
Al Gore.
Elected president. Oh, if he throws his hat in.
If Al Gore decides to run.
He may stay in the acting field. He's got a movie out there now about global warming.
Al Gore has come back from a lot. I think he's gotten a lot of respect in America for his work on global warming. And not just that. I mean, he has really been a prophet on issues such as the Internet, long in advance on it. He was against this war in Iraq early
yes,
on.
He was.
I think Al Gore is the only Democratic candidate that can beat Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Well, let me ask
if he doesn't run, I think it will be one of those.
Those
two.
Say, but let me ask you your opinion on this thing.
I like Al Gore.
I like him too, and I think he was cheated out of that election.
I think he was too.
But the crazy thing about that, though, he hasn't thrown his hat in the election
nope.
as of yet.
Nope.
They, meaning the mass media, have been painting him as some kind of wacko cuckoo because of global warming. Do you think that's a way of them trying to circumvent any oof that he may add if he was?
Well, I think the Republicans have tried ever since he won the election of 2000 to paint him as a wacko because they always knew he was a threat. After all, he won the majority of the American people. Al Gore got more votes than any other presidential candidate in American history. All right, beating not just George Bush, but
mm-hmm.
you know everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're legitimately afraid of him. Now, whether he'll come out of retirement or not, I don't know. I kind of like the sound of a Gore Obama ticket personally.
Yeah.
But listen, if not, I'd be very very happy with Barack Obama. I'd be happy with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with Bill Richards, who has a fine. You know, people don't talk about him enough, but he's got a lot of experience. In executive positions, he's governor of New Mexico, he's been in Congress, he's been, working in a cabinet member.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first Latino to make a serious run.
Yeah.
Don't count him out either.
Right.
I'll tell you the difference though. Bill Richardson doesn't give a good speech, just like Al Gore doesn't give a good speech. Frankly does Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama has some of that Clinton magic in that he can leave an audience spellbound.
He can,
and
even if he says the wrong stuff.
Well, he's got a lot of charisma, and that's very important for a presidential candidate. In fact, some argue that the reason Gore didn't do better in 2000 was solely because of charisma. I mean, people liked his policies. They liked the man. He wasn't inspiring. He didn't give a good speech. And I think Democrats are really looking for someone to replace that Clinton magic. Now, some of that magic is rubbing off on Hillary. Not so much because of her, but because of who her husband is.
Exactly.
And that's okay, too. You know, I mean, I would love to see four more years of Bill Clinton. And if four more years of Hillary Clinton means Bill Clinton's in the White House and giving her advice, that's not the worst of all things.
No, I think that we, unfortunately, people would, they'd go crazy before they would see Bill Clinton back in the White House. I totally agree.
You know what?
I
think people's description of the hatred of Bill Clinton is Republicans trying to make you think that the country hates him. Bill Clinton, when he left office,
he was
more popular than Ronald Reagan. People never ever say this,
mm-hmm.
but his popularity on his last day in office was 68%.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, 25% of America is always going to hate Bill Clinton. Heck, George Bush has 28% approval rating. So
and that's the lowest. I don't think any president has ever had the lowest of that. But I have to say this and then get your opinion on this. And this is back to the racism and the sexism thing. And unfortunately, we've been told that mass media is controlled by those who control racism and sexism, if you will. With Hillary, that's a big issue for those who apparently did not support her, who supported her husband. They just, you know, don't think a woman can do it. On the other end, and I love Barack Obama. I really do. But just because he's black don't mean he's going to get my vote either. I want to come down to experience, you know.
You know, but it's not just experience. You also the inspiration. I mean, I think Barack Obama has made a good case that it's not just experience in the Senate. I mean, he has a large experience working in grassroots movements, working for civil rights. He, in fact, worked for several years in the South Side of Chicago in really a grassroots movement. So he has his own experience in leadership that's not necessarily in government. I do think that many are going to argue that Obama should be vice president rather than president. And I'll tell you this, that's not at all out of the question. I think Hillary Clinton would offer him, I think, frankly, anyone who won
mm-hmm.
is likely to offer Obama the vice president slot. And I that's why I mentioned actually Gore Obama's my dream ticket, because I think it has the best chance of winning.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'd be happy with any of them. And I think most Democrats feel like I do. You know, if it were Bill Richardson, heck, if it were Chris Dodd, he has no chance. But I like what he says. I like what he stands for. I like everything that comes out of his mouth, so, mm-hmm. you know, I like him too.
Did you watch the debate?
I saw some of it, but, you know, it's so early. I don't want to make a decision. People are asking me who I support, you know, and I'm always saying...
Well, I'm not going to ask you that. I want to ask you, who do you think shined?
At the debate?
Yeah, in the little bit that you did watch.
I thought they all did. I'll tell you what I liked. I liked the fact that they weren't attacking each other. I really liked that. They were praising each other, and that's how I think Democrats think about our candidates. We like them all. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see them attack each other. Frankly, you know, a lot of times when you vote, you're voting against the lesser of two evils or three or five evils.
You got that right.
In this case, it's just a pleasure of riches. I mean, I would be very happy to have Hillary Clinton as my president and have Bill Clinton back in the White House. And heck, she's smarter than he is. I know that because I went to Yale Law School and she got first in the class and he was third.
I heard she's a brain man.
She's very, very smart. And frankly, she was before her time with the whole health care plan. You know, America today probably understand now the need for universal health care. They didn't understand that in 94. Mm-hmm. She'd be a great president. I mean, Barack Obama is truly inspiring. I remember after the Democratic convention thinking, who is this guy? The next day, I came on air and said, Barack Obama for president. So, you know, I've been a supporter of his ever since I heard him speak. I mean, he's amazing, and he really...
I shouldn't say this on the air, and I'm not going to call his name. I absolutely despise this guy. He should have gone way before Ima should have. He would refer to Barack Obama as the Magic Negro.
Well, and
that appeal was based on the fact that Barack could appeal to whites, middle-class whites.
You have to understand where this is coming from. And I actually, by the way, I'm on XM Satellite Radio on Friday.
Tonight?
Now.
Oh, I was going to say, I had to run home and catch you tonight.
No. It's on Fridays, Channel 169, The Power.
Okay.
On Fridays between 4 and 6:30, I'm on Mark Thompson's show, Make It Plain. And I co-host the show every Friday. So anyone who's got XM down in Richmond doesn't have to go to my website. They can hear me on Channel 169 Friday afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
But on that show, I actually brought to Mark's attention the evil radio host that was playing this really nasty racist ditty, Barack the Magic Negro.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of it comes from an article in the Los Angeles Times by David Ehrenstein, who is an African-American columnist, who was making a much more subtler point than the radio host was making, who basically just made it racist. But what David Ehrenstein was saying was that there's an appeal to white folk of a certain kind of African American who is seen as not harmful, who's seen as someone, you know, Sidney Poitier, and guess who's coming to dinner? Someone who can be respectful, and a lot of whites are voting for Obama out of guilt. Mm-hmm. I disagree with David Ehrenstein. I read the article. I see where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't vote for someone for president of the United States because you think they're harmless. I mean, this is president of the United States. This is not Sidney Poitier coming to dinner. The idea that whites will vote, you know, out of guilt for the most powerful man in the country, I mean, some may, sure, and whatever. You can't affect that. But I think most people are going to vote based on who he is and what he speaks for.
Okay.
It is true that he's not as threatening as some black leaders. But, to suggest, as the radio host did, that that's the only reason why people support Obama just isn't true. I mean, he's an inspiring leader.
And on that note,
she wasn't threatening, but I'm sorry, she wasn't the kind of speaker Barack Obama was.
Well, and on that note, because my time is up, I've got to have you back.
All right.
We're going to do Social Security
and
all the things that you've done.